Studio 360 is supported by Showtime and their groundbreaking film that uncovers Thailand's controversial new prison program, where inmates compete in Muay Thai fights for a full pardon. Prison Fighters, 5 Rounds to Freedom, Friday, February 24th at 8:30 p.m. on Showtime. Studio 360 is supported by the Vilcek Foundation, honoring immigrant contributions to American society. The 2017 Vilcek Prizes recognize neurobiologists Lily and Yu Nung Jan and artist Naree Ward. More at vilcek.org.
Studio 360.
Hey, Pop. Can I ask you a question? How come you ain't never liked me?
What the hell is your delay, Captain?
We're waiting, sir.
Waiting for what?
Are you okay?
I had another family. A mother. A brother. I can still see their faces.
What happened?
And why in the hell did you agree to do it? Because you asked, little brother.
Okay, so that puts your landing zone at 5.0667 degrees north, 77.3333 degrees west.
We're not gonna be here that much longer.
I'm not moving to Boston, Uncle. I'm on the hockey team. I'm on the basketball team. I work on George's boat 2 days a week. I got two girlfriends, and I'm in a band.
I'm human. What are you? Oh my God.
This hour is all about making movies, and you probably recognized a bunch of those clips from this year's Oscar nominees. One movie has way more nominations than any other, including Best Director and Best Picture. In fact, it's tied for the most nominations ever. La La Land, in which Emma Stone plays an actress and Ryan Gosling, a jazz musician, both struggling to make it in Los Angeles.
But I'm frankly feeling nothing.
Is that so?
Or it could be less than nothing.
Good to know, so you agree.
That's right.
I like how the film is an homage to the Hollywood musical in its 30s and 40s and 50s heyday, but also very tethered to the real world with scenes that could be in a regular drama or comedy. I asked Damien Chazelle, who wrote and directed La La Land, to come show me some of the musicals that inspired him. He said that when he was a kid in the 90s, musicals seemed corny to him, and that his love affair with the genre only started when he was studying art film history at Harvard.
It was something about the juxtaposition of kind of studying that sort of stuff and then at a certain point rewatching even musicals that, you know, had probably been shown to me as a kid, certain Fred and Ginger movies or Singing in the Rain, movies like that. And suddenly these movies that seemed very much like the epitome of Hollywood confection,
yes,
kind of Hollywood
kitsch.
Fluff,
yeah.
Suddenly seemed to me like these strange, audacious, experimental movies.
Yeah.
And I became fascinated by an era in Hollywood where the studios opened up their coffers and let filmmakers make weird avant-garde movies in mainstream packaging. Because that's really what, if you look at the Vincent Minnelli Dream Ballets or you look at a Busby Berkeley number or you look at even some of the simpler musicals like a Meet Me in St. Louis or something,
right,
or some certain Fred and Ginger movies, the way in which they revel in pure cinema,
right,
you know, where dialogue goes away and it just becomes about telling a story or telling really just an emotion really through image and sound is incredible.
We've got some clips from a few of your favorite movie musicals. First, Top Hat, 1935, music by Irving Berlin.
I'm in heaven.
Probably the scene that Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers are best known for. Tell us what we're seeing.
It's Fred Astaire singing cheek to cheek to Ginger, and now they're about to launch into their dance where it's just the two of them.
In this gorgeous, unreal mansion.
Yeah. I mean, this number, it's hard to even describe it. I think it's one of the greatest pieces of filmmaking in general of all time. I think what's so beautiful about it is it's not actually just the dancing. It's Ginger Rogers' face and how she...
Even though there are very few close-ups on her face.
Yeah, but it's she knows just how to register emotion, even in the wide, through her face.
Uh-huh.
But you're right, through the entire body, really.
I want my arm about you, the charm about you.
the whole undercurrent of emotion, I think, underneath this. It's so much more, I think, sophisticated than people even give it credit for. And part of this is also the way the camera is choreographed. It feels like it just flows seamlessly from real life.
Right.
You know, no matter how fake it seems, it's actually very natural.
So you're making this big musical. You can't adapt it literally and say, I'm going to do some shot-for-shot version. In what way do you feel like, I want to channel that in a particular scene of La La Land?
You go, okay, well, this kind of language seems like it belongs very much to this sort of world, this utterly fantastical kind of world, and this very obvious set where literally everything has to be kind of designed to a T and people break in a song, which would never happen in real life. What happens if you put that into a real location? What happens if you put that in the context of a very contemporary story, just juxtaposing things that feel like they shouldn't fit together. Because otherwise it stops being interesting. I think then it just becomes an imitation.
I think particularly of a scene fairly early on where Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling's characters are courting and they're up, maybe Mulholland Drive, somewhere high up looking over LA. And it looks real. Mm-hmm. Was that real?
Yeah. I mean, even the sunset. Like, it was always about at every level, whether it's the locations, the casting, the story. It was about what happens if you take these older musical forms and smash them with reality, down to little details like potholes on the street or gas spill stains on sidewalks. Or, you know, when it comes to the story, just the mundane daily disappointments of life as a young artist in L.A.
You grew up partly in France. Your father is French. You've mentioned French filmmakers as influences, including Jacques Demy, who was one of the less well-known filmmakers of the 1960s New Wave cinema. His best-known movie is Umbrellas of Cherbourg, which you've said is one of the films that inspired your filmmaking. But actually, when I saw the opening scene of La La Land, it reminded me of another Demy movie, The Young Girls of Rochefort. I don't want to play the clip from that film.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. Yeah.
And here's a bunch of French people in 1967 getting out of their cars and starting to dance.
Yep, right at the very beginning. So you're kind of announcing right away what you're doing. But it's also, it's very low-key dancing.
Right, they're barely dancing.
Low-key. It's just this sort of like this whole thing of stretching the arms in a kind of dance-like way. I mean, I had Mandy Moore, my choreographer, and I talked a lot about that. Had some of our first dancers in the traffic number do that. I mean, you have to, the dance always has to be expressing something emotional, you know? Right. And here, and in our number, I think it was just about expressing freedom. You know, you've been locked up in a car, and then you step out, and that moment that you feel like stretching, that's such an easy kind of transition to a dance. Like, one of the non-musicals, I think, or non-musical sequences that I, you know, was looking at a lot was the twist dance in the middle of Pulp Fiction.
Right, where John Travolta and Uma Thurman are.
Right.
That's a great scene.
Ladies and gentlemen, now the moment you've all been waiting for. It's a world-famous Jackrabbit Slim's twist contest.
They really spend their time in just pure, unvarnished dialogue for, you know, many, many minutes before that dance happens.
No. I do believe Marcellus, my husband, your boss, told you to take me out and do whatever I wanted. Now I want to dance. I want to win. I want that trophy. So dance good.
And then the dance lasts a weirdly long time.
And the thing about the dance is that exactly you get to kind of revel in it, but you've earned the right to revel in it. So I think that's the mistake actually that a lot of modern musicals make, is that there's too many numbers and you kind of feel like you get into this rhythm where you feel like, okay, when there's not a number, I'm just looking at my clock waiting because I know another number is going to come. It should feel like a number should only come when there's no other recourse.
Right.
And it should almost always come a hair later than you sort of want it to, because you want to be in a state of wanting. That to me is actually... like, that sequence gets at what musicals can do better than almost any actual musical of the past 50 years.
I mean, your film is clearly an homage to lots of different influences. I mean, you don't hide them. There's a scene in the film that seems relevant to this. Ryan Gosling's character, who is this crazy nostalgist for jazz, and he has a chair that somebody sat in and stuff. and this character he plays with, John Legend, not playing John Legend, tells him, you know, jazz has to be about, it can't just be about the past, it has to be about the future. That whole exchange seems like it's probably relevant to the way you think about cinema, right?
I do think, you know, in many ways the movie, I think, is about Ryan's character learning that there are limits to nostalgia. That was a little bit the story of his character, but I guess it's a little bit of my story too, in the sense that I know I have it in me to be to be a sort of full-fledged nostalgist. Again, I mean, all the musicals we're talking about here were made before 1970, so I know I have that bone in my body.
Right. Don't deny it, but don't let it take over.
That's exactly it. It has to be about learning from it, not just repeating it.
Right.
And it has to be about trying to figure out, okay, how do we take what was built and add the new addition to it and push it forward and actually make it relevant and urgent and timely to today.
And speaking of, again, another contrast, and well, is this real or is it romantic and stylized? Is it modern or is it not? Or not an actual glimpse of sex in the whole film?
Well, the sex scene are the musical numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's like it's kind of like, again, going back to Pulp Fiction. To my mind, you see John Travolta and Uma Thurman have sex in that movie.
Yes,
but you see it through the twist dance and through the
good point.
Through the needle to the heart.
Yes,
so we don't have the needle to the heart, but we have.
I never thought of that as a sexual act, but I get it.
Oh, well, now I put that image in your head.
Yes, exactly.
You can take that home. But the I guess I find some of the you'd say sexiest movies were some of those era movies where filmmakers couldn't just show sex, so they had to find ways to communicate.
Show heat.
And find these very sort of elegant methods by which they would communicate that. And Lubitsch would do it one way, and Hitchcock and Howard Hawks would do it another way. And the musicals had their own way. And it doesn't mean that every dance number is trying to just communicate sexuality.
Right.
But
or that you would never make a film without a sex scene.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Conversely, it depends on what kind of story you're telling. But for La La Land, absolutely. I really want everyone and their mother to see it and enjoy it, because I do think it can be enjoyed by anyone.
Well, and everyone could see it with their mother, no problem.
Well, because I took out all those graphic sex scenes.
Exactly. Damien Chazelle, it has been a pleasure, and congratulations on a very, very fine motion picture.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
That was the director, Damien Chazelle. La La Land is nominated for 14 Academy Awards, so it's not going to be leaving theaters anytime soon.